Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to be talking about the show by the new Star Trek Discovery showrunners, Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harberts, GCB.
Yes.
But before we get started, let's go back to something which we discussed a few weeks ago during Shocktober, which was the Twilight Zone.
Yes, in specific, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror.
Yes, because in our discussion about the Twilight Zone movie and all that stuff, we talked about the Tower of Terror and the Tower of Terror movie in particular, and how, despite the fact that I've been to Disney World on numerous occasions, I've never been brave enough, really, to go on the Tower of Terror, which is something which you were upset about.
Yes, I was. I know that it seems judgmental, but to have never gone on the Tower of Terror was heartbreaking to me because they are going to rebrand it as the Guardians of the Galaxy, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's just a little piece of wonderful that I felt was being lost in this world. So, yeah, I was shocked and amazed and a little sad that you hadn't had a chance to ride it.
Yeah. Well, I promised you that I would do it. And I just got back from a trip to Disney World, and I did it. It was I did it on the very first day. I think it was actually the first ride that I rode.
And?
And I liked it quite a bit.
Yes, I have excellent.
To say. It was weird because I've always been like, you know, it's the steep drops, which I'm not a big fan of, and in particular, Splash Mountain, which for some reason as a kid I convinced myself that I liked because it was a very tame ride up until that end, and then it was like 6 seconds of terror. And yeah. I'm like, after a while, I was like, I don't know why I put myself through that. I'm not gonna go on that ride anymore. And with Tower of Terror, you know, you see the doors open up, you look out, and you hear the screams from across the park, and it's like, I don't know if I want to do that, even though I'm a really big Twilight Zone fan, and, you know, the ride itself, like, I was really happy, like, when, because I got married down at Disney World.
Yeah.
And the photographer, like, took us into the ride, like, when the park was closed, and they're like, here, you know, so like I've got pictures of myself like sitting on the couches with all the cobwebs and everything, like next to my wife, like in a tuxedo and a White Sox cap, because that's what I got married in.
Of course.
And you know, it's cool, you know, and I'm like, this is really cool. I've never been in here before, you know. And something weird happened while I was standing in that line, because I was like, let's go on Star Tours first. Yeah, come on, Star Tours. Let's do that first. And then my wife is like, no, you should do this, you know. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this now and get it over with. I'm going to do it. I'm going to overcome my fears. And so I went on it. And when I was standing in line, I was nervous for a second. And then something happened where I just kind of like thought about it, and I'm like, what do I hate about Splash Mountain? It's you look down and you just see straight down, and you don't have any seatbelts on, and you feel yourself coming up off of the seat, and I think that I'm going to fly out of the car, and I'm like watching my doom. But, you know, if I'm in an elevator, like, I don't have any problem, like, looking out of the glass elevator and everything and, you know, going up and down, just up and down vertically while looking straight ahead. Like, I don't see why that would necessarily be a problem for me.
Yeah.
And I sort of, like a calm came over me. And I'm like, oh.
There you go. That's great.
Yeah. And I went on it, and I liked it a lot, you know?
That first moment when that door opens and you see the park. That's a great moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I love that moment.
It is. And then I even went back a couple days later. I went back a second time and wrote it again. But the first time I was like sitting on the side, and they have like a little handle that you can grab onto, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The second time I was like dead center in the middle of the aisle, and there were two people on either side of me who I didn't know, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do I grab onto? There's nothing to grab onto. And I was so afraid that I was going to like just grab this guy next to me who I've never seen before in my life and be like, ah, that I like had to like physically grab my knees just so that I wouldn't grab anything else.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it was enjoyable. Now I wish that I had been going on this ride, you know, for all of these years.
But at the very least, you finally did it. You overcame the fears. You went on it. You enjoyed it. I'm so thrilled to hear that. I really truly am. I'm a ride junkie. Mm-hmm. Like I love the moments of, you know, there are rides I'll get on where I will, you know, I'll turn pale and I'm like sweating because it is every, you know, basically there are some rides where the only way they could make it worse is if they like dangled spiders in front of my face. But I'm like, yeah, you know, it's that spitting in death's eye sort of feeling that I love. But Tower of Terror is just so much fun. I'm so thrilled that you liked it. I really am. I'm very happy to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. You know, there's a lot of cool stuff in there. You know, there's a lot of good Twilight Zone things. You can definitely see that this was done in an era circa Forrest Gump, you know, where the technology of putting Rod Serling into this thing, which would be so simple now. You know, they would do it in like a low budget local, you know, television commercial
with Snapchat.
Then, yeah. But back then it was like, oh, mind blowing. And you can definitely see the seams, but it's kind of charming in that way, too.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think another thing that's nice about it that is going to be lost is it was that embrace of the sort of macabre aesthetic. You know, the cobwebs and the dark, musty corridors and stuff like that are, you know, I don't see as much of an embrace of that. Everything's very polished and new looking and sleek now. And one of my favorite things about Tower of Terror has always been the fact that it was such an immersive experience. They went to the effort of making you feel like the Twilight Zone. You had gone somewhere that was different but familiar at the same time. And I wish that wasn't being lost. But again, the overarching theme is thrilled that you enjoyed it. That's great, man. I'm really glad.
Yeah, me too. And now that I've been on the ride, I feel like, yes, it does take place in Twilight Zone continuity.
Of course.
So, yeah.
You are the one person on that that ride, either time that you rode it, that was thinking at any point, is this in Twilight Zone continuity?
Yeah. No, I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone, for
yeah.
sure. You know?
Yeah.
And that was cool. That was cool.
It is cool. Yeah. So let this be a joint message to anybody listening that if you have the opportunity before they mothball it and turn it into the Guardians of the Galaxy ride, go out and check out Tower of Terror if you have the opportunity.
Yeah, from what I understand, while it's actively being turned into Guardians of the Galaxy in Disneyland, there aren't any immediate plans to turn it into Guardians of the Galaxy at Disney World. So you'll still have a bit of an extra little bit of time to see it down there. But
right, it's not gone the way that the Indiana Jones stunt spectacular is gone.
It's not gone. Do you know how many times I've gone to see that show thinking, this is my very last chance to see this
show?
What,
the stunt spectacular?
Yeah.
Well, the last time I was there, they were talking about how they were going to get rid of it because they're going to bulldoze the thing and put the new Star Wars stuff there.
I know. They keep on saying that. And every time I go there, it's playing.
Oh, they're doing
and every
it just
time
to
I
goose
go, I'm
attendance.
Like, do I go on this? Do I go watch this show again thinking that this is going to be the last time? This time I was like, nah, I saw it for the last time.
Last time I went, I dragged my whole unwilling family by marriage into the thing. And, you know, my kids who are, you know, by blood, but dragged everybody into it. And none of the adults wanted to go. I was happy as a pig in slop. And the one redeeming thing was I was wondering the entire time, you know, my kids have seen you know, Raiders. And, you know, I mean, they're kids, but they're kids of the modern era, so it doesn't have the same ring to it that it did for us. Mm-hmm. But they really enjoyed the stunt show. So, I don't know. I like those old, that old stunt show thing. That works for me, man. I love that type of thing. I hope they keep lying to us. I hope they keep pushing it off into the future.
Well, I mean, if you look at the layout and everything, I don't know if they've changed their plans or if they're, I mean, it's certainly right next to Star Tours, and if they want to extend it out there, that's a good place to do it. But the place where they're building all the Star Wars stuff is kind of like on the opposite side of Star Tours. It's like next to the Muppet stuff.
So, yeah, it was where the Mickey's hat from the Sorcerer's Apprentice was. They were just starting to take that down.
No, they took that down because they went into this whole deal with TCM to, like, quote unquote, revamp the Great Movie Ride. So,
oh, really?
So now you can do, like, because there was a whole big thing where, like, the people who owned the Chinese theater were mad that they had the thing. So they put the hat in front of the Chinese theater so you couldn't take a picture in front of the Chinese theater. But now that's
why they did it.
Yeah. And then we had to wait in line to get into the Chinese theater. And I'm like, well, this is going to be amazing. What did they add to it now? You know? And like nothing. Like there's a narration from one of the guys who introduces movies on Turner Classic Movies. And then they have like some different trailers and stuff in the pre-show, and they have the Ark of the Covenant sitting in the middle of the lobby.
Oh,
when
that's
you're
awesome.
That was pretty cool. But you know, yeah.
Well, listen. So long as they don't ever talk about getting rid of that Aerosmith branded ride, that would just be crazy because Aerosmith they're really relevant with the kids nowadays, Mike.
Oh yeah, yeah. Aerosmith never dies, and that's got Janine Garofalo in it too. So.
Was she in it? Oh, and there was some other actress. I can't remember her name. Played their manager.
No, that was Janine Garofalo. Yeah, she was.
No, it wasn't Garofalo. There was somebody else who played their manager.
I'm pretty sure it was Janine Garofalo.
I'm willing to go to bat on this one, man. I'm willing to go to bat on this one.
We'll have to.
I promise you, it wasn't Garofalo.
Okay. All right. Okay. We'll see about that.
We will. I'll enjoy being proven right later.
Okay. All right. Anyway, enough about the Tower of Terror and Disney World. Let's move on to our feature for today, which is GCB. Now, this is by Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harbert. So a lot of people are like, who are these people? Because, you know, they're not huge names in the realm of sci-fi fantasy television, even though they've done tons and tons of work on television, including, you know, sci-fi fantasy television on things like Roswell. And, you know, the Fuller verse with Pushing Daisies and Wonderfalls and all that stuff. But this is the show which it's one of, it looks like a couple shows which they were showrunners on. And it aired in 2012. It only lasted 10 episodes. It's called GCB. It aired on ABC. Yep. And it starred Leslie Bibb and Kristen Chenoweth.
Yes.
And a few other people. And yeah, would you like to give a synopsis of this show?
Sure, why not? Desperate housewives, but in this case, the main character didn't kill herself to serve as narrator. Her husband died in, an act of karmic vengeance. And she moves back to her hometown where she has to come to grips with the fact that apparently nobody got over high school there. And wants to torture her for being terrible decades ago.
Yeah, yeah. She was the mean girl in her high school. And now she is kind of reformed and has to come back to town and has to kind of prove herself to everyone in town who is now, while she was, you know, the head cheerleader and, you know, the at the top of the pyramid, literally and figuratively. She's
and the
not,
boyfriend stealer, too.
Right, right.
And she's, wound up marrying the guy she stole from another, blah, 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 blah.
She's now at the bottom of the social pyramid. You know, all of her, you know, former high school mates are rich and popular and everything. And she's living with her mom, who's extraordinarily rich and, you know, working at, you know, the Boobylicious as a waitress and
the Hooters allegory
yes
is where she's working
and just trying to to scrape by in high-end Dallas.
Yes.
So this was based on a book called, well, Good Christian Bitches. That's where the GCB comes from. I guess they figured they couldn't say that on ABC.
In the pilot, they say Good Christian Bells. They dance around it.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah. And yeah, it aired for just a couple months, you know, only 10 episodes. And yeah, what did you think about this?
Should have aired for less than 10 episodes, Mike. Didn't enjoy it.
Okay.
Just going to throw that out there. And the thing is, before anybody thinks that it's just because it wasn't in my wheelhouse, as it were, you're talking to a gentleman who watched the entire first two seasons of Desperate Housewives with his beloved spouse because we both got a kick out of it. We thought it was fun. And although I might have watched longer than that. I know it was shortly after Kyle MacLachlan came on that one that I tapped out. But anyway, GCB is it's not particularly good. It wasn't compelling. I didn't enjoy it. I found a lot of it to be disagreeable with my tastes. And how did you feel?
I would say that I enjoyed it. You know, I was not head over heels in love with it by any stretch of the imagination. It's not the type of thing where I'm like, oh man, I wish they would have, you know, picked up, you know, the back half of The Order or whatever it was, you know. It was, you know, 10 episodes was fine. I wish it would have had a bit more of a conclusion. There were some episodes which I definitely felt were kind of treading water, and I didn't really see like an end game in place or anything like that, but I found it to be amusing. I found the performances to be good. I liked the kind of quirky style, and you know, I mean, as the nature of the source material, I don't know, it was really interesting because it was definitely poking fun at this lifestyle, this like Dallas high society and everything. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, while it was definitely sort of like, you know, pushing buttons, like I didn't feel like they were being disrespectful to them at all.
No, I see that my biggest problem, in all honesty, is I found the, and you know, humor is very much a personal taste sort of thing, you know, that given, I just found a lot of the jokes to be lazy. So for me, that's where I tap out. And I suppose being something of a Desperate Housewives fan, I just felt like it was Desperate Housewives, but not done as well.
Yeah.
Because Desperate Housewives was really cleverly written in the first couple, maybe few seasons. And this felt like a rush to sort of try to match it, you know, to speak to the production. You know, it's slickly produced. It's, you know, well put together. It's quick. It just didn't work for me.
For the most part, the humor, I guess, wasn't stuff that would make me like laugh out loud or whatever. It was, you know, just sort of like, okay, I get that joke. That's interesting. But there were times, like there were moments where I'm just like, oh my God, that is absolutely brilliant. You know, like the first time that you see her mom was played by Annie Potts, and these two massive, you know, like attack dogs run out at her. And, you know, this being Dallas, you know, Annie Potts calls out to her two dogs and she's like, Tony, Romo, get over here. You know, I'm just like, ah, that's a good joke. I like that. That's funny. No. Okay. Yeah. Because like I saw that joke and I'm like, oh, I need to stop this and watch it with my wife because she's going to love this show. And she watched the first episode and did. But. Yeah,
I will say that Annie Potts was, you know, the shining high point of as much of this as I managed to watch. I'll be completely honest with you. I did not make it all 10 episodes. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But Annie Potts, I liked it. She brought it and she was good. I just felt that she was better than the material that was around her.
Yeah. I did watch all 10 episodes because, you know, even though I wasn't head over heels in love with it, I did find watching it kind of effortless. You know, there's definitely shows like The X-Files, you know, which is like a masterpiece where, like, if you say, like, sit down and watch 10 episodes of The X-Files, I've like, that's a bit of a chore, you know, because it's like heavy in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very sort of like plotting and stuff like that. And I know that that sounds like I'm really criticizing the X-Files, but I'm not. But like this, it was like light enough that you could just kind of like burn through it without much effort. You know what I mean?
You know, okay. Obviously, I didn't like it, but if I were to turn it around and sort of follow the spirit of couching it in a positive way, I would say that this is the type of show you could have on in the background while you were doing one or two other things.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if that's how you watched it, you probably would enjoy it as much as somebody who sat down and, you know, popped some popcorn and actually watched the show.
I could see that. I could see that. I did like it. You know, I mean, you know me, I'm a sucker for religious satire, and there's a lot of that going on in here, even if it is, you know, very lightweight, you know, in terms of that stuff. But there were a number of things in there which I found to be amusing. And, you know, Leslie Bibb, I think, is really good. Like, she's always been one of my favorite parts of, like, Iron Man. You know, I mean, God, you know, this is like, I've talked about this before, I'm sure, on some podcast, but, like, one of my absolute favorite moments in Iron Man is at the very end where she's asking Tony Stark whether or not, you know, we're supposed to believe that this is his bodyguard or whatever. And he's like, the truth is, I am Iron Man. And everyone is just like, why? You know, like you see the room like erupt into whatever. It's like the very last thing you see. If you look at her in that scene, she is sitting there completely unimpressed, just like, ugh, I knew it, you know? And there's just the way that she plays that little shot where it's just her in like a big crowd, and like you won't even notice her until you watch it like the second or third time. She's spot on perfect. I mean, I don't know. I love her in that movie. And it was cool to see her in like a starring vehicle here. I mean, you talk about, you know, like us maybe not being the target audience for this. Like, I was looking on the IMDb at the various episodes and, like, seeing what the ratings were, you know, the user ratings for each episode. And by far, the highest rated episode was one, I don't know if you saw it, but it was, like, a musical episode?
Nope.
Okay. Where
didn't make it that far.
They decide, it's like episode 8 or something like that. And basically, they decide that they're, you know, like, there's this whole thing where, like, the pastor at their church went to, you know, pastor school, seminary. I should know that since I have a dad who
You probably to, should know the word seminary. Yes.
I had a dad who attended seminary, but whatever. He went to seminary and with this other dude who's a pastor at another church, and they have like a rivalry going on. You know, I see it similar to the rivalry between Sisko and that Vulcan in Take Me Out to the Hollow Suite. You know? and the other pastor is like, we're putting on a show and we're doing all this stuff. And their pastor is like, oh, we're putting on a show too. You know, and he's like, quick, we need to do this. It's basically the Take Me Out to the Hollow Suite of GCB. But that episode like ends up being basically like musical comedy in a sense. There's like a lot of like physical humor. There's a lot of, you know, like dancing and singing and everything. And I'm sitting there watching it, and that was like the one episode where I was like, this is terrible. Like, this does not work at all. I have no idea what's going on. They have completely gone off the deep end with this show. You know,
you would think ABC would have learned its lesson from Cop Rock, but alas.
No, yeah. But apparently, I'm the only one, because that is easily the highest rated episode on the IMDb. And I'm like, what? You know, no. You know, I mean, like the episodes that I liked were like the ones where they did one called "Sex is Divine." You know, where they do this thing which I've heard of. You know, like real pastors doing this in real life, where they're like, "Sex is a, you know, when it's between two married people, it's a It's a beautiful thing. It's a sacred thing. And I'm going to, you know, it binds relationships together. And here's my challenge for you. Every day this week, you need to have sex with your spouse, you know, and then hijinks ensue. You know, like I thought like, well, that's smart and funny. And, you know, that's a good episode. But when they're just like, you know, oh, we've got this person up on this rig with these big wings flying around. Who's, you know, she's playing the Holy Spirit or whatever. I'm just like, what are we watching? You know, really? Come on. Come on, guys. You know what I mean?
And I guess I got to that point much earlier in the series.
Okay, that's fair. So. That's fair. That's fair. But
perhaps I foresaw an episode such as that coming down the pike, and some sort of defense mechanism in my brain said, no, stop. Don't fair. Get there yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
but I mean, I will say that I did enjoy a lot of elements of it. You know, I thought that, you know, each of the characters was pretty well defined, which I think is kind of hard to do in a show like this, especially when you're, you know, sort of going off of a formula which has been established in other similar shows, you know. And I thought that they did a good job of making each character unique and in a way which sort of like added to the dynamic of the show. You know, they played off of each other really well.
See, the thing is, I like in terms of the dynamic and the, you know, the structure of the show, it seemed, I mean, the fact that this was on ABC is even strange to me. ABC was also where Desperate Housewives, like if this had aired on CBS, I'd be like, oh, CBS is trying to answer Desperate Housewives, or NBC or Fox, they're trying to answer Desperate Housewives. But for ABC to answer their own show with a show like this just seems,
well, was it answering it, or was it like Desperate Housewives is leaving, we need to find a replacement? Because, I mean, the pedigree is there. You know, you've got like, okay, it's based on a best-selling book. It's produced by Darren Star, who did the Sex and the City, you know. So it's like all of the pieces are kind of in place. The cast is really solid. You know, you would think on paper that this would be a hit, right?
So what happens when it looks like it, I mean, it's, I guess, like a football team where, you know, you can look at a football team on paper and you can say, why aren't they winning a Super Bowl? What is it that doesn't gel in a situation like that? What does, I mean, obviously you enjoyed it more than I did, but not enough where, you know, by your own admission, you were like, oh, I wish they'd picked up the back half of the order. What is it that goes wrong in a situation like that?
Well, I think there might be a difference between success and popularity, for one thing. Okay. But as far as like, why isn't it successful in terms of a popularity standpoint, if you know what I mean?
No, I mean, you know what? Honestly, my question, because of my reaction to it, is, yeah, you know, it's got a high-powered star like Chenoweth on it, you know, who's going to draw in people who know theater and singing and those sorts of things. And it's got the production value, and it's based, like you said, on a best-selling book. What is it that doesn't come together? Why are they not able to hook somebody who, by my own admission, I enjoyed Desperate Housewives, the first few seasons. What is it that doesn't click for somebody? Is it fatigue from the previous show plays into it? Do you think that that's coloring my perception?
It could be. It could be that. It could be circumstance. It could be like when it comes on, like what time of the year it comes on. I mean, who knows, you know? I mean, it could be that it's just not as good, right? I mean, it seems like, you know, I've only seen the first episode of Desperate Housewives and I enjoyed it, but it seems like that's pretty stellar in terms of its caliber, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're trying to follow the formula, maybe what is missing is that thing that Desperate Housewives had. You know, it's like, I mean, we'll think of like Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine is in a lot of ways sort of like the heir to the original series in terms of its themes and stuff like that, and yet it's least similar to the original series in terms of its premise, you know?
Right.
Maybe it's not being aware of what it is that makes Desperate Housewives great. Maybe Desperate Housewives, if you're trying to make an heir to Desperate Housewives, you shouldn't try to make a show about a neighborhood full of housewives. You should try to look beyond the artifice and see what it is that makes the show tick.
So is there any warning bell at all? I don't think there is.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they've done so much stuff. And, you know, I mean, I think that there is some stuff in here which we can, you know, apply to what we've heard about Discovery. You know, more than anything, I think what I found interesting was, while there was a continuing storyline throughout this, it's not like each episode was a cliffhanger. Each episode was definitely a self-contained story, and you could watch it, but then there were threads which continued throughout and, you know, led from one episode to the next. And I think, you know, probably not as self-contained as this show is, but I think that that's kind of what we're going to be seeing with Discovery, you know? But whether this show is good or bad or whatever, you know, even though this is, you know, one of the few shows which they were showrunner on, I think that Brian Fuller probably wasn't looking at GCB when he picked Berg and Harberts as his successors. I think he was probably looking at, you know, Pushing Daisies and Wonderfalls and the shows that they worked on together. So, you know, anyway, you did not like it. And
no,
I have a feeling, considering the fact that it only lasted 10 episodes, you're probably in the majority. I enjoyed it. Would I be like, go out and watch this show? No, probably not. You know, but hey, if you're curious about it, it's on Hulu. So
yeah, if you have a Hulu subscription, you can go ahead and just watch it. You can buy the season on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, you can buy it on
I would advise you not to buy it. If you got Hulu anyway, go ahead and give it a try, and let me know, both of us know, how many episodes you made it through.
Yeah, and they wrote the third episode, I believe. They only wrote one episode, but I believe it was the third one. So yeah, check it out. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, in the next few months before Disco comes out, we will definitely be looking at some other stuff that Berg and Harberts have done, because it's an extensive resume, and, you know, stuff that we've seen, even though we haven't necessarily talked about it here, there are a lot of things that they've done, which we're very fond of, both of us. So yeah, we'll definitely cover that stuff as well. All right. Well, it was fun talking about GCB today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm. To the journey!
Some races are like Talaxians. We really don't know how long they've kind of been around.
Char, what? I just had a great idea. I need to calm myself down. I need some ice. I need some ice.
Okay. Rest your head. Okay. Easy. In and out.
Warp 5.
What's your favorite episode of Enterprise?
I usually say Strange New World. The first part of Strange New World just reminds me so much of being a kid and growing up in southeastern Oklahoma in the mountains and the woods. And I just imagine what it would be like to go camping on an alien planet.
Meta Treks.
After 150 years of sitting around in the mud, that's got to be one relaxed symbiont.
But there again, it shows that, at least for the symbiont on Trill, that there's life beyond the mud.
Life beyond the mud.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite part of the Star Trek universe. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, hit the subscribe button in iTunes. Leave us a review. Or don't even leave us a review. Just leave us a rating. You know?
Yeah.
Tell us what you think. You know, that really does help us out. And if you're not an Apple user, you can find us wherever else you want to get your podcasts, whether it's Stitcher or SoundCloud or our own website. You can find us wherever. If you want to contact us, You can find the network on Twitter at Trek FM, or you can find the network on Facebook at facebook.com/Trek FM. And also on Facebook, you can find the Babel Conference, which is our listener forum where you can talk to us about things like GCB or Berg and Harbert's other work. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Look for me as Kessel Junkie on the internet, like the ghost of Tom Joad. You can also find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. You can find me co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Trek FM's own Matthew Rushing. And you can find me co-hosting another show called Great Shot Kid with you, Mike.
Yeah, I guess we should mention the fact that we have a new show on the Nerd Party Network called Great Shot Kid, which is basically this exact same show, only we talk about Star Wars creators instead of Star Trek creators. So head on over to thenerdparty.com and check us out. This week we're talking about Godzilla, the Gareth Edwards Godzilla. So head on over there and see what you think. You can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and you can also find me here on Trek FM producing From There to Here, which is our daily rewatch show. I have to tell you, I just got finished editing 40 straight episodes of From There to Here. And I'm ready to not edit the next four episodes.
This may be the year that breaks Mike from ever watching Star Trek again, folks.
I keep on thinking, once we get to January, I don't have to watch Star Trek again until May. Yes.
You are the reason that they delayed Discovery.
Yes.
I think we need to break that news here on this show that they were listening to From There to Here, and the writers themselves said, oh, we need a break, man.
Yep. They're like, oh, man, I feel so bad for that guy. We're just don't, you know what? Just for him, we're going to push this back to May. We want to thank our associate producers, Chris Steftenagel, Norman Seelau, and Jeff Sutter.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, we couldn't do it without you. And Jeff, we are going to get back to you. I promise. I've been out of town. It was the vacation from hell, aside from the Tower of Terror bit. And we will get back to you. I promise.
Yes, we will.
Another way that you can help us out is to become like Jeff and Chris and Norm and become a patron of the network on patreon.com/trekfm. If you go there, you'll find all of our current goals and different milestone contribution levels and all of the perks we have for you. So head on over there and help us out if you can. We really appreciate it. All right. Well, I guess that's it for From There to Here this week, talking about GCB.
We're stage 9, Mike, not From There to Here. It has crept into your brain.
Yeah.
There's no escape.
You know what show you're listening to, even if I don't. But yes, check out From There to Here today, because, hey, we're talking about some Star Trek. But after that, next week, a week from now, on stage 9, we're going to be talking about the new novel by Robert Hewitt Wolfe, The Goblin Crown.